when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hi, I'm Joy Marie Parker, and you're listening to episode 2 of Joblogs. Welcome to Joblogs, a podcast that features candid conversations from young professionals about work, life, and everything in between. Welcome back to another episode of the Joblogs podcast. Thank you so much for subscribing, listening, sharing, and leaving your comments on the website. The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, so thanks. In case you missed it or tuning in for the very first time, last month I chatted with Gina and Wei, co-founders of New York-based clothing line Avantour, and we had a really inspiring discussion about their journey starting a clothing line with no prior fashion experience. They shared some of the lessons they learned along the way, as well as some of the mistakes they made. So go back and give that a listen if you haven't already. Today, I have a really special guest in the studio with me. If you're thinking about mixing business and friendship, or have done so in the past, or if you've ever wondered what it's like to work in the entertainment and media fields, then you're in for a real treat. I think you'll really enjoy this episode. So without further ado, let's dive right in. So today I'm so excited to have Erin Stiles in the studio with me. Erin's currently a corporate communications manager at a global media agency. Previously, she worked as a publicist in the entertainment and television realm, both in-house and on the agency side, with some of your favorite shows and favorite housewives. I'll let her talk about that in greater detail. But she also happens to be my best friend, so I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome to the show, Erin.
I feel so awesome about being here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to talk a little bit about like why I was motivated to have you on the episode today. I think recently you've really helped me out with a couple ideas I've run past you about Joblogs, about the direction of the podcast, some of the content on the website. And I got to thinking about just like the way we interact and engage our friends and the people in our network. And I think the dynamic of our friendship has changed and evolved over the years. And I'm just beginning to get to know you in a professional capacity, which is so interesting because we've been friends for how long now?
Since like seventh grade. So
yeah, which is like
we're 27 now. So for a really long time.
Yeah, like 14 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we've gone through different phases of friendship, but I really want to kind of just dive into some of your career, some of your experiences, but also talk about our friendship dynamic and how we've kind of leveraged each other both personally and professionally to solve different things that we're going through. So thanks again for joining. So I'd love for you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and your kind of career trajectory.
Sure. I'll preface this with all of my career track so far has been built on the foundation of being obsessed with pop culture and living and breathing it in every way, from standing in line for Saturday Night Live to going around the country to, you know, live my dream of being a Justin Timberlake groupie, to loving television so much that I, you know, used to build out a schedule of what I was going to watch every fall, what was going to work with my school schedule, then work schedule.
Wait, did you really?
Yeah.
Wait, when was this?
I did this through college and, you know, after graduation.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I remember middle school, I think, and we grew up in the same neighborhood, literally, like, what, a 2-3 minute walk from each other. And I remember coming over and you had like the NSYNC posters and you were really, really
into
it. I still
have some of those.
Yeah. But wait, no. So let's go back to that, because actually I feel like it was your interest in pop culture that kind of got me into building websites. Do you remember that?
Kind of, but what do you mean?
So back in like the seventh grade, I think it was, or maybe the eighth grade, you had a website. And I think originally you had, it was like a .com website. This was a big deal at the time for a kid to have their own website. And I think you built it as a fan page originally. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No. I think I originally built it as an online blog. With photos.
Really?
Yeah.
Other people had fan pages. There was something pages and websites.
Yeah, I would follow NSYNC and what they were doing, and that would lead to different fan sites like NSYNCLAND.com, NSYNC Studio, and on KiwiBox.com. Some of you might remember that website. It's still around. And that would just lead me to different fan sites. And you know on the sidebar how it says other websites that they like?
Yes, that's what I remember.
So then that would lead to blogs that weren't even about entertainment and just personal ones.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? I think I do some fun, cool stuff. Let me write about my life.
Oh, I didn't even know that. But so you had your website, and then you introduced me to yours, and that piqued my interest in designing my own site. So for a couple of years, I think it was, you actually hosted me as sort of like a subdomain, a branch off of your main website.
Yeah.
And I had my own little mini website on your site, and we would build. I mean, we would stay up till like 3-4 in the morning building layouts.
Yeah, it's
and,
so crazy to think about that time.
Yeah, because, teaching ourselves HTML from scratch and CSS.
Yeah, what was the one program that people would use to, it starts with like an M.
Movable Type.
Yeah, and that was so hard.
So now like WordPress is the huge content management system. Back in those days, it was Movable Type, and we were installing that stuff from scratch.
Yeah, a lot of it we were doing writing our own HTML.
Yeah, like a notepad.
And the fact that we were able
scratch.
To do that. But a big part of it is my parents, especially my mom, was really supportive of my love for computers, and my dad as well, given that he works in the computer industry.
In IT.
So, I mean, I always loved it. I was obsessed with those, dude, you're getting Dell commercials.
I always loved
commercials. You don't remember those commercials? It was with the guy that was basically like a stoner that was in, I think, like a freshman in college, and he would go around to his friends and they'd be really excited and be like, dude, you're getting Dell. Don't remember those. Those are funny.
I don't remember that. But I bring all that up because I don't know if I've ever told you this directly, but I kind of credit that period of time as the reason why I'm now interested in like design and building websites. And I think a lot of my digital and technical creative thinking came from those experiences. I don't know if I've ever thanked you for that, but you really sparked it originally. And even to this day, you know, like with Joblogs, building the website using WordPress, I still use a lot of the stuff that I learned back then.
Right.
So that's really interesting how it's kind of come full circle like that. Derail the whole conversation. But yeah, continue to tell us a little bit about how that kind of brought you to where you are now in corporate communications and PR.
Sure. So I went to NYU, dream school, without a doubt. It doesn't make those lists for no reason. Like, it's an incredible, very unique college experience that I wasn't quite sure that I wanted until I visited the campus and fell in love. And I came knowing that I was going to major in communications, but didn't know quite what path that was going to take. Mm-hmm. Because while I loved pop culture and music and movies and television shows, I didn't think that I could actually work in the industry. It kind of seemed far-fetched and so glamorous. And you see, you know, you watch these award shows and it was like, that's so unrealistic.
Yeah.
But, you know, meeting people in college and those experiences and seeing people that actually worked in the industry was really inspiring to me. But I didn't even believe that it was possible until I got my first internship in the television industry my sophomore year, which saying it out loud that's not that late in college, but I felt for a long time like it wasn't realistic.
Yeah.
So I decided to do a double major in economics because I was thinking,
was that your backup plan?
Yeah, it was. Because I didn't know if I was going to be able to land a position, but internship to internship, you know, in entertainment, working at NBC and Al Roker's production company, working at The View in production. And then that led to working. I was really passionate about children's television. I wanted to do that for a long time. So I did internships at Cartoon Network and PBS. But a lot of my experience in my internships wasn't just production. It was communications and PR. So that's what my first internship, big internship at NBC was, working in their corporate communications department, which was a really eye-opening experience because it was the Olympics in 2008, mm-hmm. which they do a lot of coverage for, and it was the year that Tim Russert died. Mm-hmm. He used to be the host of Meet the Press on NBC. So I got to see crisis management, exciting event communications, all at one time. So then after graduation, you know, I had the opportunity to do the PAGE program at NBC.
Yeah, which is so... I was doing some research on that and on your resume. And actually, the PAGE program, it looks like it's 10 times more competitive to get into than Harvard. Yeah. So, I mean, a really selective, competitive program. And you got in.
Yeah.
But tell us, so I want to backtrack a little bit before we get into that, though. Tell us about how you secured the internships. Were you methodical and intentional about the types of internships you were pursuing? Who kind of laid the path in your mind in terms of the trajectory that you were going to follow? Did you have other people that were in the field that you were like, you know, I kind of want to do what they're doing, let me kind of follow their trajectory? Did you test out a lot of different things? Like, what was that process like even in college?
Yeah, 'cause even in college, social media isn't what it is today, obviously. I mean, I started college in 2006 and Facebook was a big thing, but LinkedIn might have been around at the time, but people weren't using it. And I think that's what a lot of people would use now to see people's career trajectories plainly and easily. A lot of it was seeing my friends and people that I did the SNL standby line with getting internships, and also the opportunities that I got from my counselor at NYU. So, you know, the job posting that they had there, NYU really pushes doing internships. You're right here in the city. I think it's something you should 100% take advantage of if you go to a school in a major city.
Yeah.
Especially one that caters to what you want to do for a living. And doesn't have to be a big school. So just following those and being proactive about seeking opportunities and letting people know what I'm interested in.
How did those internships play a role in getting the PAGE program?
Oh, they were the reason why I got into the PAGE program.
Yeah,
I interned at NBC twice. So like I said, in the media communications department and then later at the Today Show. And the recommendation letters that I got from my supervisors at those positions were the reason why I got the position.
That's awesome. Yeah. So tell us about the PAGE program. That was a 1-year commitment, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were doing a lot. I don't know if you guys have watched 30 Rock and seen Ken's character, but that's essentially what you were doing, Aaron, right? Like giving tours.
It's an extreme version of what I was doing. So it is a 1-year commitment, and it's basically a bunch of people that just graduated from college that are hanging out together all the time, pursuing their dreams. And it comes with the drama as well that you would expect. It's kind of like high school 2.0.
Really?
For better or for worse. Mm-hmm. But it's cool. So part of the program is doing guest relations. So you do tours of the studios, like Late Night with Jimmy Fallon and Saturday Night Live and the news with Brian Williams. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it is doing guest management or seating audience coordination at different television shows like Dr. Oz and Late Night with Jimmy Fallon.
Very cool.
Or now Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and Late Night with Seth Meyers. And then later, you know, as you're in the program, you get the opportunity to do assignments and you interview for them like their real jobs. So there's assignments in different areas in production, in entertainment production, CNBC doing production there. It really runs the gamut. And NBC obviously is more than the broadcast network. NBC Universal is also the cable programming. So Oxygen and Sci-Fi, Bravo, USA Network.
Yeah.
So you have the opportunity to learn the skills that you want and connect and network. And what I think the best part of the PAGE program is that you're growing with 50 plus other people in your career that you'll be able to tap into as you grow together.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that it is obvious, right, about like how the different companies are broke down and structured and even what the opportunities are that are out there. Did you find that your experience in the PAGE program exposed you to all those different nuances, or did you do research on your own outside of, you know, going into work every day? How did you maximize the opportunity really to kind of get to the next step and get that full-time opportunity afterwards? Because I know a couple other people in the PAGE program. Not everyone has had the same success. So,
oh, that's a good question. I think a lot of it is being damn good at your job. like you, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to show yourself and be good at your mm-hmm. position, because I've worked with people that aren't that great at their positions.
Yeah, that's real.
And I think networking and staying in contact with the people that you built relationships with when you're at those internships, because the person that I developed a relationship with when I was a page got a job at Oxygen as a coordinator when she and I was her page, essentially doing publicity at Oxygen.
Okay.
In that role, and I reported to her. When she left, she immediately thought of me, and that's how I got my position. We'll talk about it later, but she's the reason that, she's also the reason why I have the job that I currently have.
Yeah.
So it's building those relationships and staying in contact with people that's essential. You did ask about how did I get to know the nuances of the company. I was obsessed with NBC. Like, I was very myopic in my thinking about NBC. Like, I knew that I was going to work there after graduation because I had a love affair with it from when I was a kid. I loved SNL. I did the Page program. Like I said many times, I did the standby line for SNL in college. So my dream was to work at NBC, and I got there. So I think having a focus is essential. And so I lived and breathed the NBC brand. So, you know, can I talk briefly about the interview process for the Page program?
Yes, I would love that.
Yeah, it's really intense. So after you do your phone interview, and if you get called back for the next round, that next round is to do a panel interview.
A panel?
So you're brought in with about 20 or so, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, other candidates.
Yikes.
And it's three parts. So the first part is you're all sitting around a conference room table with about four or five people within powerful positions at the company that can help decide if you're going to get the role. And you all have to stand up and answer questions. You don't know what the questions are going to be, and those are all asked in front of the group, and you have a couple minutes to answer the questions. And then afterwards, everyone's taken out into the hall, and then one by one, you interview with a panel of four or five of those same executives to know if, you know, they ask you questions about, you know, if you had the, if you were the president of NBC, what would you change about the company to make it more financially successful, to bring in more viewers. What is your favorite brand under the NBC Universal umbrella? So, you know, you can go online and see a lot of that. So you kind of have a sense of what might be thrown at you and the intensity level. So it's possible to study for it a little bit, but you can't.
Yeah, but I mean, so you got through. What do you think is the common denominator in people that were successful and went through that interview process successfully versus people maybe who got rejected? Because since you've graduated, you've also, you know, met other people that have been interested in the program, applied, maybe gotten in, maybe not gotten in.
That's an interesting question, because I, you know, I think a lot of it is personality and if they feel something that clicks in you, because a lot of people that got it don't have extensive internship experience. They just have the passion and the interest to be there, because the last part of the interview process is doing a 2-minute presentation, drama, some people sing, some people dance.
What did you do?
I did a poem or something like that, about my
wait, I've never heard you write a poem.
I was diagnosed with NBC syndrome.
Oh, really?
And that there's the only cure is to be in a Page program, something like that.
Wait.
I don't remember it too well. All right, I'm going to I don't remember it.
I've never heard a poem from you with Dan.
I don't know if it was a thing,
yeah.
Soliloquy.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's such a good point, because I think that holds true across the board when it comes to jobs. And I think it's a common misconception about interviewing. You don't necessarily need the experience all the time, especially at the entry level. It's a lot of times hiring managers and recruiters are looking for the passion and for the commitment and dedication. They want to know that you'll be there a while.
Exactly. So,
that's interesting. Anything else on the Page program that you'd have the people know?
I think it's a great opportunity. I am so happy that I did it. And if anyone wants to hear more about it, hit me up.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. So let's pivot a little bit, because you touched on this earlier, and I actually have this jotted down as a note. You touched on just not even thinking that you could get, you know, the roles in publicity and PR and communications from the outside. And I think that's something that a lot of us feel and experience. I know I personally did as well. New York City is a huge city where people come to pursue their dreams. People want to be artists and poets and models and actresses. So what was the process like? And I'm talking about like mentally here, getting into the mindset of really feeling like you could go for this thing and get it? I mean, did the internships give you the confidence to kind of keep moving forward? Or, like, what was that process like emotionally and mentally?
I never really thought about that. I think getting that first internship, which was in television, I'd done fashion internships before and I mm-hmm. hated them. It just wasn't me. Getting the first internship with Al Roker's production company really mm-hmm. opened my eyes that this was actually a possibility and that mm-hmm. I had what it takes to get my foot in the door. And that made me feel really proud of myself, built up my confidence. Mm-hmm. And I really realized the importance of networking at that point.
Yeah.
And I realized that I did have the power to make my dream a reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I went through something similar. And I mean, I think about this all the time because I kind of transitioned. You know, I came to the New York City about 4 years ago. You know this. I didn't have a job at the time. I was kind of freelancing, doing different things. I worked in retail for a little bit. I did a lot of, like I said, freelancing. And I was getting paid like $10, $15 an hour. Like, it was a really tough time. And you see other people that have these jobs that you want, and you don't always feel empowered enough to go after them or to get them. And for me, quite honestly, what helped me to transition from the role that I was in into the role that I currently have, kind of full-time salaried benefits at a large financial services company doing marketing, was changing my mentality. And that's why I kind mm-hmm. of touched on it and spoke about it. Because a lot of times I feel like the barriers we create are internal and they're mental. And, you know, I just want everyone out there to know, like, if you have a dream or a passion, regardless of what it is, you can go after it. You can do it. You can go for it. Like, it's possible. And I feel like we're both testaments to that. So.
No, that sounds good. I really agree with that.
Yeah. So I want to backtrack a little bit, too, because mm-hmm. you also touched on the glamorization of the industry. And, you know, I want to tread carefully because I don't want to turn anyone off from pursuing careers in fashion, entertainment, media. But I think there is something to discuss there. I think a lot of times people think it's a lot more glamorous, and working in event marketing too, it's sort of the same thing. People see events and say, oh, you know, like, that's so cool. It's glamorous. They kind of see all the superficial outside stuff and don't know that it's actually a really tough career track. Can you speak a little bit about, especially at the entry level, some of the challenges, the stress factors, and just realistically what you need to put in to make it in PR and communications,
right,
or media, entertainment, television, that whole field?
Well, it is cool. I don't want to not stress that. It is really cool, like getting the opportunities to go to these premiere parties mm-hmm. and seeing people walk down red carpets, and not just seeing them, working red carpets and being close to the stars.
Yeah,
is really cool and eye opening. And it's like, wow, I've quote unquote made it, or something
right.
along those lines. But it is a lot of work because the expectations are high, because you're working with people whose names and brands are on the line, and
yeah.
they're depending on you to help build their brand or keep it consistent. So the pressure is on every step of the way, and any type of communications, for sure. You have to cross all your T's, dot all your I's, and mm-hmm. make sure that you're buttoned up in every way, because again, you are representing yourself in terms of that, you know, how you do your job, but there's other people and brands and talent that are depending on you to represent them in the best way.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy. And it's not easy for everybody. I've seen a lot of people struggle with it mm-hmm. because their priorities are somewhere else, and their priorities are just going to the parties and mm-hmm. rubbing shoulders
right.
with those celebrities.
Right. But I mean, like, so at the entry level, what's a typical day looking like? Because so I,
that's hard.
I'm asking leading questions, because I feel like as your friend, you had some really awesome and cool and enriching experiences. But I also saw the flip side of that, right? Like days when you were really stressed out. And I mean, I want to kind of just demystify the field of
yeah.
fashion and entertainment a little bit, and just kind of be honest about some of what you might not see in a Google search.
Sure. I think something you might be talking about are the personalities of people that you work with, in terms of, you know, bosses, superiors. Is not always easy. And I think specifically in the entertainment industry, it produces a specific personality type. Mm. And I don't know if it attracts that personality type, but I think it creates people and makes people feel like they are the celebrity and the star and that they're able to treat people and, you know, not always the best way.
Yeah.
And it's learning to navigate that without losing yourself as well.
Yeah. And how did you do that?
I left the industry.
Well, that's a good segue.
No. I loved working in entertainment television. And I was just ready for a different type of challenge is the reason why I left. But going back to what is a typical day like or, you know, what are those specific challenges? I can only speak to working at my first job was entry level. My second job at entertainment television wasn't. But the entry level, it's going in, doing your press clips, which is pulling together what was in the press about your company and your talent and your television shows the day before, because that's important for your executives to see. It's putting together press kits for television shows. It is putting together press itineraries for press tours for talent, meaning if, you know, Bad Girls Club, I used to work at Oxygen. If we're doing a press tour for one of their shows or when Ray J was hosting their All-Star Battle, we would secure press for him on different television shows in New York or LA, and we'd have to make sure every step of the way was covered, the hotel, the cars, food, everything, and you have to make sure you're double checking, triple checking. So it really is so many different types of things. We do, you know, do events for.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Called the upfronts, which is presentations to advertisers about their upcoming programming, and so it really runs the gamut. There, it's hard to say what a typical day is.
It changes. It seems to change and move a lot. And you spoke about talent. I've actually benefited from all of your learnings there in terms of booking talent. You've helped me with thinking through how I secure guests for the show. How I reach out to people that I'm interested in interviewing and profiling on the website, too. So I've certainly benefited from those skills that you're learning as well. How did working in entertainment and sort of television change the way you viewed or enjoyed television, since you've shared you are a huge pop culture fan? How did working in that industry kind of shift?
You no longer look through it through rose-tinted glasses, because you see what, even just working on a television show and working on the PR side of it, you see what goes into the making of it, which is really neat to have that behind the scenes, but it obviously loses some of its glamour when you can see how the show was developed and what's going to happen next and all those aspects. And it's neat, but it also, you do see that these are just real people that are working on a product, and when people aren't genuine or rude, that they are just people. And I think a lot of people, even though they might read blogs like Media Takeout and see that there is like a lot of nastiness, they still don't realize that people are also genuinely like that.
Yeah.
And everyone isn't, but that can be tough.
Yeah.
To see that, you know, some people aren't grateful or.
Yeah. I think it's hard when you're on show and you watch yourself back too, like when you're on TV and you watch that back. I think a lot of us might not like what we saw on screen if we were starring in a reality TV show, because you're on 24/7. Is reality TV real though?
As real as you expect it to be.
Meaning?
It's as real as you expect it to be.
Okay. All right. Awesome. So let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about, we chatted a little bit about just sort of passion and the idea of being really passionate about something. And then even in, especially in entertainment, advertising, marketing, those fields, it's a lot of hard work at the entry level. But I've been struggling with this idea of faux passion for work. And Gina, who was on the last episode, actually shared an article with me from the New York Times that is called The Tyranny of the Forced Smile. And it talks about this idea and this notion of us being like so enamored with our jobs and having to like put up this kind of a facade about how passionate we are about what we're doing. What's the fine line? Like, what's the balance between a true passion and interest for what you're doing, but also being authentic and being realistic and saying, hey, I have other interests. Like, at the end of the day, this is a 9-to-5 for me. Do you find, like, in your field of entertainment and television, it's expected that you're kind of, like, overly passionate about what you're doing all the time?
I wouldn't say it's overly passionate. I think you need to care and have that passion in order to do the job successfully, because it's not a 9-to-5. Mm. Like, you, when you sign up for it, you should know that that's not what it is. You're going to work late nights frequently. You're going to work weekends.
Yeah.
There's going to be travel involved. Yeah. You have to be available to pick up the phone if something happens to your talent.
Yeah.
So you can't go into it thinking that, oh, I have other passions or other interests that I want to pursue, and so my job is going to have to take a back seat to that.
Mm.
You can't come into it with that mentality.
But what's the balance? I mean, is there balance or...
I think that goes job to job and the mm-hmm. relationship and the boundaries that you set up with your employer.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think entertainment, PR, is not like that. You give yourself to it.
Yeah.
And not just entertainment PR, even in my current position.
For sure.
Communications is, you know, you have to be available.
Yeah.
Because crises will come up. Non-crises will come up when you need to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Because of who was asking the question or has the need.
Mm.
So I think anyone that enters this field is if they're able to balance and are willing to lose some sleep,
mm-hmm.
They'll be successful.
And what's the reward? You know, it's been pretty negative. I've been pretty hard on you, but what's the reward? What were some of the kind of highlights of working in entertainment? What was the best parts of that role in that field for you?
It was always really, and it still is, let me say, because I don't work in entertainment PR, I still work in PR communications.
Mm-hmm.
It's just on a different type of product. It's whenever you see press that you pitched, secured, and you got the interview, or it's going on television, and you've seen it all the way through from the pitch to when it's airing on television or when it's in the newspaper, you see the spread in the magazine, it's so fulfilling.
Yeah.
And when you get a high five or a thank you, that means a lot. You're not even, you know, just saying that's awesome.
Yeah, across the board, mm-hmm. I think, in general. So, we've been touching on it, but tell us a little bit about the shift and how you transitioned from entertainment PR to your current role in corporate communications for an agency.
Sure. So I was working at, I was at Oxygen before, and then I went over to a PR agency, which did television PR for various cable networks. And then I got a call from the woman who helped me get my position at Oxygen, who I spoke about before, and she said, hey, know you've been talking about wanting to pursue other opportunities. I know you're interested in global opportunities, and I have one right here for you. Would you be interested? Because, you know, she's a person in a great position there who's very influential and persuasive, and it was mine for the taking. And I said, you know what, I'm going to take this. I didn't think about it very much. It wasn't I'd been feeling a little jaded about mm-hmm. the entertainment industry, and I was ready to pursue something different. And when it was presented to me, I hopped on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you let her know. I mean, she knew that you were looking. What was that like? I mean, because it's kind of vulnerable. It puts you in a vulnerable state to put out there into the universe that you're looking for a new job. I'm finding that process, you never really fully get used to it, having to get back into the job market and look for a job. I mean, I have friends that reach out to me, yourself included, as they're transitioning, and they've been working, you know, a couple of years, very successful, but it always seems to be a really daunting and scary and kind of vulnerable process. So what was that like for you?
I wouldn't say that my experience was like that, because I had a job that was secure, and I was just open to the opportunities, and I let people that I trusted know that. So I fortunately haven't had the experience where I really needed to secure work. And so I am always, but I do let people know when I'm interested in other opportunities. And I've fortunately had a supportive group behind me to help me pursue those.
How do you do that in a way that, you know, doesn't burn your current bridges? Like, what, tell us a little bit about the process.
Sure. I mean, well, nobody at my that job that I had at the time knew.
Oh, okay. So just sort of knowing who the right people to tell
and, you know, building that network of trust. Like I said, people that, you know, are going to have your back but aren't going to burn you in the process.
Yeah.
But I just want to emphasize, it's really important to let people know that you're looking.
Yeah.
Because, or that you're open.
Yeah.
Like I said, because that job is going to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And based on the circle that you develop around you, those opportunities will come.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm, you know, we're in each other's circles when you talk about a circle of people that you trust in a network. And I, you know, I got my current role the same way too. I kind of put it out there. I targeted the company very specifically. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to a young girl who was working on this company, but on the agency side. This was one of her clients, and she put me in touch with someone that worked at the company, and it kind of just happened from there. So I completely agree in terms of just putting it out there. And a lot of times the opportunities that come up, they're not even posted, you know, you can't find them. So you rely on your network, and you rely on that circle of people you trust to share those opportunities with you. That's great. So we actually have a question for you from Danielle from thelifestylemuse.com. And she wants to know what motivated you to transition from corporate or from entertainment to corporate communications. And was that a difficult transition?
It was a difficult transition, and I'm still getting there because the company that I work at right now is a media planning and buying and strategy agency, and I do corporate communications for that agency. I don't know anything.
Tell us a little bit. World. I'm going to pause you. Tell us a little bit about media buying and planning, because this is something
I don't necessarily. I'm joking. I can't speak.
But it's, you know, it's something I was confused about for many years, because I think media and as defined by sort of the agents ad agency world is different than media as we kind of generally know it when we talk about PR and television and entertainment. It's two different things.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know that. So can you just speak to that a little bit?
So what I'm learning is, so media are the people that really have the money to keep these television networks and the programs on the air. So media is, so brands, Fortune 500 companies, smaller companies, like new establishment companies like Airbnb, have a media budget that they have to adhere to, and they have money. And so then a lot of them hire agencies to help them strategize and execute that money and deciding where they want it to go to best build their brand and get word about who they are and move them into the future.
Okay. So like ads placed during the Super Bowl, a media agency is responsible for.
Right.
Got it. And so tell us about the transition. What were some of the things that were tough going from? Essentially, what I'm hearing is having clients that are individuals, TV shows, to now having clients that are internal. Are you serving your agency internally, or are you serving the clients of that agency? Like, are you working
both
with companies now?
Both. The main part of my job is doing internal communication, so building culture within the agency itself.
Okay.
With different event opportunities internally, like bringing vendors in to do cocktail series, or putting on our end of year party, to external communications, which is working with the media, the press. When I say media, I'm talking about press, like the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
Working with them to get the agency story out there.
Okay.
So it's clear what we stand for on various topics and the evolution of the industry during this, you know, really disruptive time.
Yeah.
In the media landscape. And then with clients, we will help build their individual brand for their marketing leads.
Okay.
And so helping them get awards, opportunities, speaking opportunities. I'm really learning in the advertising industry how important awards are.
Yeah.
There's awards on top of awards on top of awards.
Girl.
And so I'm writing those submissions. I'm submitting for Agency of the Year awards. So it's a lot of writing. It's very writing heavy, but there's a lot of events, like going to cool stuff. Like, we have a huge presence at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. So it's neat.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting now that you're in advertising, and we kind of laugh about this all the time because we sort of did a switcheroo where I was in advertising before and needed to get out. We're in entertainment and got out. So it's really interesting, and I've valued kind of the conversations and vent sessions we've had. And also just like best practice and tips and advice that we've shared in our personal conversations about how to navigate that. But I do want to get really tactical with you about how you leverage that skill set in entertainment and sort of like the pop culture interest and passion to get the role in corporate communications. Like what steps did you take? What shifts did you make on your resume? Like how were you changing the way you were speaking about your experience to highlight the transferable skill sets?
Well, what's so fantastic about communications and the skills is they're easily transferable. Mm. I can go from working in entertainment to working at a media agency to working for, you know, new establishment brands to, you know, working for a car dealership. So you really can do, to working, you know, at a college, because the same skills are required and the same savvy of being able to do crisis management and building a brand, its presence in the press, is the same thing wherever you go. It's being able to learn what those individual companies do and represent is essential, and being able to shift and pivot your thinking towards those.
Okay. And so did you find that the companies you were speaking to or interviewing, well, you know, the company you ended up going for, that wasn't a challenge for them to see the correlation between what you were doing before and what you did, what you do now, essentially? Because I guess what I'm asking is, I think a lot of people struggle with getting out of the mentality that they're doing one thing and understanding that there are transferable skill sets that they can speak to that are very similar and that you get on the job training. Because I feel like so many people reach out to me for feedback on their resumes and they're very stuck in this mentality of, oh, well, I was doing like this thing that is like only account management, so there's no way I could go for a media job. And it's like, yeah, you can. I mean, I think these are like constructs we define and that corporations do define as well, but we get very stuck in a job function and don't realize that, especially at the entry and mid-level, it's quite easy to transfer as long as you have the skill sets.
Sure. So the basics, writing. I would write a press release for a Real Housewives of Atlanta episode. I can use that same skill, just tweak it and know what the message is and the voice of the brand is, how it's different from Housewives to now it's talking about a new technology that we're bringing on at the agency and how it's going to benefit our clients and the industry overall. So it's learning that skill to deliver a message effectively is transferable. It's event planning. You're planning an event for a red carpet for a premiere of a show. It's the same thing as, will require the same skills and the know-how as planning an event at a CES or a Cannes Lions Festival. So it's the same skill sets, and it's important to be able to stress that and truly understand what you're doing and how it's broad. Because like you were saying, a lot of what people do is not just that specific. They've only done it in that specific area, but it can be transferred.
Right, absolutely. And I touched on this earlier, but I mean, you've been so helpful and beneficial with JobLog. So actually recently this month, I introduced a new segment of the website on joblogs.com. It's called Adventures Abroad, and we're spotlighting young professionals that have global experience representing countries all over the world. And that idea actually came from you. You reminded me that we'd had a conversation. I was sort of batting some ideas, asking you for, if I remember correctly, asking you for input on what I could do. And I think this was early on, even before the website had launched. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I wanted to touch on that because how important is it to you to have a network of professionals that are actually friends that you can go to and maybe speak to a little bit more freely, more openly than you would like colleagues or, you know, other acquaintances that you've met professionally?
I think it's critical. And it's something that I'm working on myself and developing those types of conversations and making a point of having them. Because I, you know, I go to a lot of networking events and you build these relationships with people, but they're, for the most part, pretty superficial.
Yeah, not that transactional.
They
can't,
not that they won't benefit you, but you don't get to always ask them those real, raw questions that are going, you know, what are the mistakes that you made? How can I benefit from that? What do you think of this idea? So I am starting to have those conversations with my girlfriends about their own careers and mm-hmm. where they're going and what they want from themselves, and, you know, talking about issues that I might have at work, or not even an issue, but brainstorming with them, what do you think of this idea, yeah. before taking it to, you know, my supervisors.
Yeah, and I mean, we've spoken about so many different things, from negotiating salary to, like, yeah. you know, batting ideas off of you in terms of job logs and different entrepreneurial ideas. Even like I touched on earlier, when there are job opportunities that you have, you're sending them my way. When I have job opportunities on my end, I send them your way for referrals and recommendations. So I do agree that it's so important. And I think I'm just starting to realize that, too. Mm-hmm. And it's a different dynamic. And it's really interesting to look at your friends through a different lens. Because, I mean, we, like, obviously we've all been working for a number of years now, but I never truly looked at you as sort of like a PR professional and communications manager. I look at you as my friend, right? So yeah. starting to interact in that way has been really beneficial. But are there any drawbacks, or, I mean, you can be honest, like, are there any watch outs in terms of doing that with your friends? Can it ever make the relationship sour? Or, like, how do you feel when we have those conversations? Are you happy to have them?
No, I'm happy to have them, and I appreciate the candor that comes with it. I don't think it's always a good idea to talk about salary and things like that with friends.
With friends?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think it's good to talk about, you know, giving suggestions for negotiations. Mm-hmm. And everyone says not to talk about salary with friends, but I think you really shouldn't.
Oh, do they? I didn't know that was the thing.
Well, that's what, like, I, you know, I think a lot of people number. Say that. Like, yeah, the number. Not talking about, you. Even, I mean, you might want to talk about, like, brackets, but mm-hmm. I would kind of shy away from that too, because inevitably people are, you know, thinking about themselves and, well, why am I not making that much, and what does that mean about me?
Really?
I think it's helpful to talk about, what, you know, goals and aspirations, but I think it can cause unwanted feelings between people.
Really? That's interesting. I mean, I disagree, because I feel like our conversations and my conversations with other friends in my network have made me much more aggressive in terms of what I'm looking for as a number. So they've almost motivated me to aspire to numbers that were unimaginable and unattainable to me just a year or two ago. You know, chatting with you and chatting with other people has kind of made me want more. So I almost disagree.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it's made me realize, like you said, with the internships, right? You see people around you doing it and going for it and getting it. I feel the same way with salary. It's like, if I have a friend that has a similar number of years of experience as me, and they're able to make, you know, double what I'm making, well, why can't I? I can. I think this has been really great. Is there anything else you want to touch on? I really want to get your advice for people in college, young professionals, or even seasoned professionals looking to transition into public relations or the communications field at large. What tips would you offer them, just from your experience in your last couple years in the industry?
I wouldn't just suggest anyone just decide to do public relations or communications in any industry willy-nilly just because they want to do PR. I think you should pursue it in a field that you have an interest in, be it education or sports. Literally any industry that you can think of has a PR firm.
Right,
so I think it starts with deciding what you want to do and what you want to talk about for, you know, while you're at work. And I think an essential part that a lot of people aren't always strong at, and I'm working on it, and a lot of my colleagues are working on it, is writing skills. Being able to convey a message succinctly and accurately while still being attractive is key.
Yeah.
Writing, like, take, if you're in college, don't just take the required writing courses, take more, challenge yourself.
Okay.
And keep networking. Let people know that you're interested.
Awesome. Thank you. So we're going to do a couple rapid fire questions. Mm-hmm. Do you listen to podcasts?
Yeah.
What are you listening to?
I listen to This American Life.
Okay.
Almost every day.
Anything else?
I listen to This American Life.
And job logs.
Yeah, of course. Just job logs too.
Favorite city in the world?
Los Angeles.
Awesome. Let's see. Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island, Brooklyn, or the Bronx?
Manhattan.
Okay. Favorite childhood show?
Oh, that's a good one. Dawson's Creek. I'll say maybe Lizzie McGuire.
Yeah, and I mean, it's...
Joy can remember the Lizzie McGuire
I was
obsession.
About to say, like, you're not even right now, because you were obsessed with
and
those shows.
And I forced
shows.
You to go see the movie with
you
me,
did.
The Lizzie McGuire movie.
You did. It's all good, though. Good times. and then my last one, which I know you're going to get a chuckle out of, JC, Chris, Joey, or Lance.
Justin's not on there.
I knew you were going to have that reaction.
No, it's JC all the way, baby.
JC's number two. So we got to spend.
No, JC's number one. He just
JC is number one.
Yes.
In the group that I named.
If NSYNC,
right.
My number one favorite member of NSYNC is JC. There's just nothing to support right now.
There has JC, not JT, not Justin Timberlake.
Joshua Scott Shazay.
This is a lie.
No, it's not. Joy, you can go back. I'm a huge JT fan, hands down.
Yeah, so no.
I've traveled.
By huge. Let the people know, because we're not playing this game today. JC is not your number one.
Yes, he is, but what is there? There's nothing
for me to support.
How many
JC concerts have you been to?
20 plus.
Okay.
All right. But that does, again, it's simply because JC isn't doing it. But for the listeners that are NSYNC fans and JC fans, stay tuned for a campaign that's coming up soon to encourage JC to return to the music scene. There's going to be a Kickstarter. Stay tuned. That's the reason why I came on the show to talk about that.
Thank you, girl. All right. So this was so awesome. I'm so glad you joined. I think it was a really great conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you for being here. Let the people know where they can connect with you on the internet, on the interwebs, Twitter. You have a Twitter.
Yeah. I guess.
You don't want to share
it? It's not professional at all.
It is.
If you want to hear about Justin Timberlake and pop culture, my Twitter is at Aaron M. Styles.
S-T-Y-L-E-S.
I'm also on Instagram at She Is Aaron.
Yep. And after the episode, I'm going to upload this to the website. Feel free to leave your questions and the comments on the episode page. And I'll make sure Aaron sees them so she can respond. Thank you. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it, be sure to jump in on the conversation at joblogs.com. That's joblogues.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at joblogs for behind-the-scenes photos and other exclusive content. If you're interested in recommending someone for the show or discussing partnership opportunities, be sure to get in touch. My email is hi@joblogs.com. Many thanks to Aaron Styles for joining us in the studio today, and thanks to Adrian Wagner for producing this episode. Catch you next month.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.